In this study of the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we are reading a very important part as to the spiritual life. It is here that we very graphically see that the spiritual life and the spiritual wisdom consists in transforming our life, making it go according to the virtues, which then make us see the truth. It is the not that we read and understand and know, that is one way of knowing, but the knowledge of our true self cannot be earned, cannot be understood in that way. It is realization, it is becoming. We become that, and to get to that proper realization, the right understanding, the life needs to be tuned to that. A life that is not tuned to that may actually keep on studying scriptures in an intellectual and academic manner for a long time. It may have its benefits. That person may be able to write a highly acclaimed book on Upanishads. That person may be able to get PhD in studies of Upanishadic and Vedantic philosophy. That person may be able to give scholarly lectures. But all these are not the signs of realization of truth. Shankaracharya explains this in the great work Vivek Chudamani, the crushed jewel of discrimination. The title of that book is so beautiful. Viveka means discernment. What is right, what is not right, what is true, what is not true, and so forth. So Shankaracharya there mentions that this study intellectually done, what is it? The verse that comes there, the language is very interesting. He says, Vag Vaikari Shabdhari Shastra Vyakhyana Kausalam Vaidushyam Vidusham Tadvat Muktaye Natu Muktaye. That means that your brilliance in expounding scriptures, your understanding of the grammar and the intricacies of the various ways in which one can interpret the meaning can be of a very high standard. And the words can be flowing like a fountain through your mouth. A person can have all this. But what is this? This is like an intellectual enjoyment, that's all. People have various levels, various ways of enjoyment. Many people have enjoyment in eating ice cream, and many people have their enjoyment glued to listening to music, and many people think the best way of utilizing life is to watch football games. So people have different ideas of enjoyment. Some have the ideas of this reading, studying and getting intellectual pleasure out of it. But one must distinguish that this intellectual pleasure is not spiritual wisdom. it is different from that. The actual perception of the truth does not really depend on how brilliant you are. One may be intellectually very brilliant, doesn't mean that person is spiritually illumined. Another person could be illiterate, might not have read any of these scriptures, but if that person has the life which is full of these great virtues that we have been studying, then that person has seen God. A great mystic, Kabir, says therefore that studying books, great scriptures for ages, nobody really becomes wise. The one who reads two letters, he says two and half letters of love, that person is really the wise person. That should be, that person should be called the real wise man, a sage. The great Christian mystic Saint Francis of Assisi therefore says that it is worthwhile to walk to give a spiritual discourse if your walking is a discourse. What it means is that when every action of yours is full, permeating with that wisdom, just that wisdom, that knowledge of the true self is oozing out through each of your activity, each of moment of your life, your glance is full of that, your facial expressions, that is full of that. Every little work that one will be doing will be expressive of that tremendous spiritual wisdom. And how one gets it, that is being described. That we saw a few virtues, like there shouldn't be the sense of ego or pride, thinking that I am superior to others, that should be avoided. There should be no attempt to just show off. There should not be this feeling of enmity or hatred towards others. There should be forbearance, the attitude of forgiving and forbearing. There should be straightforward that way of dealing with people. There should be no clever cunningness associated with that. These are then foretold the feeling of indebtedness and devotion towards Guru, that one's teacher is to be adored. Then there is that we will be discussing now. Oh, the next one is purity. Cleanliness is the physical purity. The cleanliness of the thoughts, that is the purity inside. Purity inside, purity outside, both are to be practiced, because they are related to each other. Of course, the purity of the inner world is more important. Our intentions must be pure, right intentions. Our thoughts must be pure, in the sense they shouldn't have these desires or the idea of cheating somebody, or any such covetousness. All these should be absent, even our thought world. But that doesn't mean that we should neglect the external purity. It is possible that you can neglect the external purity after one is established in the internal purity, and there is a perceivable disconnect between the body and the mind. But for most of us, the body and mind, they are so glued to each other that a clean body automatically inspires the clean thoughts. The unclean body automatically makes the mind also tend to go on those lines, and therefore both are important, that is the cleanliness and purity. Then steadfastness, dhairya, that one should keep on performing the spiritual disciplines, also whatever the undertakings that one has taken up, in a steadfast manner. Many of us have this innate tendency to take up something today, give it up tomorrow. It is just like taking something, tasting it and discarding it later. That kind of attitude will not help us to really grow spiritually, get the benefit of this spiritual practice, if we keep on just flirting with those things. That taken up today, gave up tomorrow, did for a few days. Today I received an email about this, that a devotee said that he did meditation for some days and then could not do it or forgot about it. And wasn't very steadfast about taking it up and holding on to it, and he is again taking it up, but why should we do it in a steadfast way? If we do it haphazardly, what happens? Then we lose the benefit of it. Meditated for one day, then didn't do it for 3 days. Somebody may ask that what I did one day, is it all gone then? Well, not that it is all gone. It is like this. Suppose you want to cook something. You put it on the stove for a few seconds, then turn the stove off, went somewhere. Again, after 2 days, you remembered and turned the stove on for another 5 minutes and again forgot all about it. So, does the cooking will happen like that? One has to be steadfast in spiritual practice. Doing something, it is free, then it is just making fun of it. That we get interested in something, I just taste it for a little while and then forget about it. So that will not yield results. So a spiritual aspirant should be steadfast in these practices. And all these things that are being told are so efficacious that as we practice them, we will be able to see and verify the results for ourselves. Yes, the life starts moving on the right track. Just as if we are driving in the right directions, then after a while we will be able to see that for ourselves, that yes, I have been driving, going in the right direction. If you want to go, say for example, to New York, then you will see the signs in New York 180 miles. Then after, if you are on the right track, you will see New York 150 miles. Well, so you have made progress. So one will be able to see the science of spiritual evolution too. So that requires, as it is said, steadfast practice and Atma Vinigraha. Why we are not steadfast? The mind goes on wavering and getting and just scattered in a million directions, and thus we do not get that steadfastness. So to get this steadfastness, one needs to keep these modifications of mind under control. That tendencies will be coming there, the vibrations will be coming there, that what happens, you know, today let me go to meet that friend, or let me just sleep, or let me watch this nice TV serial, or many such things can happen, and the mind then gets scattered more and more. Therefore, in spite of so many other things that one is one has to do in life, one has to keep a very steady spiritual awareness too, and corresponding spiritual practice too. Awareness as well as practice, they should go on in a steadfast manner to get the proper result. And then some inner qualities to be developed. Indriyarthishu vairagyam. The senses, they look for the pleasant sensations from different objects. And how are these? They bring pleasant sensation as well as unpleasant things. So, knowing this, one should develop a distaste and the spirit of renunciation towards those. This is very helpful for getting the spiritual wisdom. If the mind keeps on running towards the objects of sensual enjoyment, then there is no possibility of spiritual wisdom even getting a chance to come in our life. So this one has to cultivate, develop. As Sri Ramakrishna used to say, one must think that what is there in all these objects of enjoyment. There is nothing there, no substance in it, and they come and go and they leave a lot of suffering and bondage that we see. But that bondage has this aspect, that it again and again makes us go to it. Bondage means we can see this, that although the enjoyment vanishes, the bondage persists. And because of bondage, one will go to those objects of sense enjoyments again and again. Why that happens? There is now no enjoyment really. One knows that what is there to enjoy? But the impressions have been formed so powerful, so strong, that in spite of our that knowing that there is really no enjoyment there, the mind and after that the body both will get dragged into that. So one has to be very particular about it and learn to develop the opposite tendencies. As Patanjali beautifully describes, that the way to do it is to develop the opposite tendency. That is what is told here, Indriyartheshu Vairagyam. The mind would like to go to an object of enjoyment. Hey, let me grab this. And as it goes to grab and develop that tendency, oh no, I will not do it. Establish yourself into that. Gradually the establishment comes. Our teacher used to tell that a beautiful example, that if you buy a metal sheet to use in some of your repair works or in your household for some purpose, usually in the shop you get it rolled. Now you have to make it flat to make use of it. You have to get it flat. If you unroll it and leave it, you see it again gets rolled up. So what should be done? He said that those who work with these things, they know the technique. They reverse roll it. That metal sheet is then that rolled reverse. And some weight is put on it. And after some time, when you open it, then you get it flat. So the mind has acquired the tendency to go towards those objects. Now reverse that. That no, I will not go to it. I will go to something opposite to it. So these tendencies, that opposite also will have to be given up. But to remove this, first you practice the developing an opposite tendency. Another teacher of mine used to tell that he said in physics, you must have studied parallelogram, law of forces. In high school, most of us study parallelogram, law of forces. That means the essence of it is that if you have a force and if you want to turn it in one direction, only turning in that direction will not really turn it in that direction. You have to turn it almost double of that. Turn it double of that so that actual resultant will be in the middle. So that is the law of parallelogram for law of forces. That it is according to the hypotenuse of a parallelogram that the force will move. So if we want to bring about a change, a particular change in our habits, in our awareness, only doing that much will not bring it, because then it will go in the middle again. It will go, it will form a parallelogram and go in the middle. So what one should do? Go double of that. In our language, there is a saying, and that if you go for hunting, if you go for hunting with the preparation to hunt a tiger, maybe you will end up at least getting a jackal. If you already go with the preparation to hunt a jackal, then you may not get even that. So if you go with the preparation to hunt a tiger, then perchance you may end up getting at least a jackal. So if we want to bring about a change, the right change in our life, in our perspective, then the requirement for that has to be assess and make efforts to double it. Then you will see that you are going in right direction. Otherwise you will be going again in the middle, not the right way. So this is the indriyarthesu vairagyam. One has to develop first that strong distaste. Sri Ramakrishna used to tell in my early days of this spiritual practice, if I would say my relations would look to me, it is such a graphic description, friends. My relatives, they would appear to me like deep wells, and if I go, I will fall. So he would not go there. When the change came in the life, when this discipline was reached its fulfillment, then it didn't matter then, because now you don't have to forcibly do that. But initially, why? Because there is a strong tendency of attraction, mingling with them. There is, friends, there is nothing wrong in admitting or accepting it. This is part of our being physical human beings, that we will have all these attractions. Nothing particularly wrong about it on this mundane level. And let us not feel that kind of inferiority about it, that, oh, I am so bad, I have all these bad tendencies. Well, they are naturally. But that doesn't mean that they are to be supported. Many things are naturally there. One devotee said that what is wrong about marijuana? It is, after all, it is a nice plant put by God right on the earth, you see. For us, God has put this nice plant for us on this earth. So what is wrong about it? Then in reply I said, well, God has put even poison ivy on the earth. Who put the poison ivy on the earth? If that is the only argument, I am not talking about the merits, demerits and all that about it. But this is no argument that it is an herb put by God. He had argued that it has medicinal values. Well, medicinal value, what does it mean? Even opium has medicinal values. The snake poison has medicinal values. Does it mean that it is to be taken by everyone? If you have a particular condition, then as a medical prescription, to that extent, to that dose, you can take it. But that doesn't mean that it should be taken by everyone and should be considered good for everyone just because it is natural. Things are there natural. Natural doesn't mean, and many of us have this idea, if something is natural, it must be good. No. Natural, the evil tendency is the tendency to thief, for thieving, that also in many people come naturally. That doesn't mean it should be supported. It is, in fact, there is a very nice story in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad that there are the two children of God, two siblings. One are the evildoers, the demons, and their brothers, they are the angels, the demigods. The angels and the demons, they both are the siblings. The demons are elder. And Shankara comments there, why demons are elder? Because they naturally come. They are the first to come. And then the angels, they have to be cultivated. The angelic tendencies, the good tendencies, they depend on cultivation. They need not always be automatic. The demonic tendencies, they do not need any particular cultivation. If we do not assiduously make efforts to cultivate the good tendencies, the bad tendencies automatically take over. So, this is that law of second law of thermodynamics, as they say, that the disorganization and disturbance, it naturally increases. It is not required to put any efforts for that. Efforts are required to create organization, to create a system. Breaking of it happens automatically. You don't need to make any efforts. If you do not organize things at your house, after some days what happens is disorganization. You don't have to put any special efforts for that. To make things good, you have to put special efforts. And that very story continues that these demigods wanted to conquer the demons, means put these evil tendencies at rest, wanted to defeat them. And so they approached God, their common father, what should we do? And then he told them that be disciplined. Udgita. And there is that sentence, Udgita. That means follow this discipline that will take you higher. That is the meaning of this little word, Udgita. So through Udgita, you evolve yourself and overpower these demonic tendencies. And that is what is mentioned here as indriyarteshu vairagyam. It is to be developed initially. Then it becomes automatic. When the knowledge dawns, then this becomes automatic. When the person is getting all happiness from within, then there won't be a tendency at all to seek happiness from anything outside. So there is no attraction for any sense pleasure at all. So one doesn't need to control it either. There is no need for controlling it when it is not arising at all. This should be, of course, understood that many times people feel that as the age advances, that will come automatically because the body will not have the capacity to enjoy. That doesn't mean the desire to enjoy goes away. It is only one gets incapacitated because of this, that's all. That teeth are not there, so because I have now not very good teeth, so I avoid eating crunchy things, not out of a lot of renunciation. It is because it is I cannot do it now, so that is a different situation there. Old age does not automatically bring this spirit of renunciation. One can be very in ripe old age, but the desire to enjoy just goes on remaining. It goes on further increasing, in fact. So therefore one must be really working to curb it, to control it, to then one can see the positive results in that. Then it is told here that anahankara, that there should be no, earlier also it was told amanitvam, the seeking of respect. Anahankara is something more subtle. It doesn't seek respect from others, but feels self-importance. So that is the ego. And then this is a very important thing that about one's own life, janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshana darshanam, that we take we say to physical pleasures, the pleasures of the body, but look at the body and see how foolish it is. See the faults in this kind of pleasure. The body is born, and later on people seeing the pleasures of childhood, the glories of childhood, poetries are filled with that. How nice were the days of childhood. And go to the childhood, ask children. They are trying to grow out of this childhood. This childhood is so terrible that they are all dependent on others. I told a story some time back that a little child, his dad is a wonderful musician. So he had come and at our ashrama there to give a performance. And this many years back that with accompanying him was his little 2-year-old son. Then just after the beautiful concert, I asked the child, "Hey, would you like to become such a nice singer like your dad?" And he shook his head, "No, no way. I don't want to become a singer." So then we asked that, "Okay, then what would you like to do when you grow up?" And he showed, "I will smoke like my dad." Now it is being childish, so hey, you should not. But the dad is grown up, so that is a different story. So his aspiration is, after I grow up, then I will get rid of all these restrictions on me. Like now, being a baby, everybody just ill-treats me. Nobody really gives me proper dignity. They think that I cannot do anything. Let me grow up and then I will show all these elderly people. So it is, this is the childhood, that childhood sufferings. And then your youth, it is again the sufferings of the young age. Then, well, old age comes, we don't have to tell about the sufferings of the old age. Then it is janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi. There is sickness comes and goes. And the life is there. Sickness. One lady in our dispensary used to ask, our doctor used to ask her, "Are you feeling better now?" "Yes, yes, I am feeling better, but again I fall sick. Give me such medication that I will never fall sick." And the doctor showed her that railway line was going there, you know. And then he showed that when the train comes, you know, you lie down there on the track. And that will then not bring any disease to you anymore. It is all in jest. So, hey, not that kind of medicine. But what it means is that having a body will just mean that there are diseases. It is a machine. If you have a machine, it requires maintenance. Similarly, this body requires maintenance. It requires, you know, the repairs and all that. So that is disease. So requirement of repair comes as in the form of some disease to us. And all this, look at these all problems with the body. Do you still want to go after the enjoyments of this body? What is it in it? It is all blood, flesh, bones, stool, urine, all that things. It is, do you want that really to go after the enjoyments of that? So think of it and get your mind reverted from such ideas. So then develop asakti anabhishvanga putradhara grihadishu. This is the ninth verse, that develop unattachment and non-identification to these our household, our these progeny, then the siblings, the spouse, about all of them, and develop a spirit of unattachment. That well, for a certain purpose, that time being, we are together for fulfillment of something. But actually, one should not get attached to that. It is very important that people suffer so much and go away so much from spiritual enlightenment because of getting tied, getting attached to all such these relations, my husband, my wife, my children, my grandchildren, my mother-in-law, or so many, you know, there is no end to it really. In India, if you in the old age, old times, you know that people used to have always talk of so many relations. Once my grandfather, I remember telling me, "Oh, do you know this man?" Said, "No, I don't remember meeting." "Oh, come on, let's go and see him. He is your close relation." "My close relation? What do you mean, close relation?" He said, "You know, your mother's maternal uncle's some." He went 3-4 further steps, and that is the relation, you say. And he says, "Close relation." So it is close relation, but so one gets entangled and attached into that. So, and forget our true relative. God is our true relative. And that is, all others are really not that important. They come and go in life. Why this is called is, one has to remember we have duty towards them. But duty towards them should be performed, yet no attachment should be allowed to develop to that. Perform the duty. Sri Ramakrishna used to insist that, and whole Bhagavad Gita, you will see, this is the major central note in that, that performance of your prescribed duties, that should not be given up. But the attachment in that has to be given up. It is that attachment that is what binds us. So one has to make efforts to get rid of that. Then, nityam cha samachittatvam ishta nishto upapattishu, that the life will have the sometimes good tidings, bad tidings, good news, bad news, that there will be moments of elation. Hey, I won lottery, or I lost lot of money in stock market. One should take that with equanimity. Well, that is the life. Do not get excited about any of these things. So, this is the life of such person, that there is no elation or depression because of the external situation. it will be sometimes good, it may not be good, it is all, the world is like that, it is always changing. But this person maintains the equanimity always and then develops a deep devotion to God. That what is real, my Ananya Yogena, 10th verse, that the love is directed towards God alone as the reality of everything. All other things are loved because of the God. Not for those things as such. The love should be directed only to God. Not because something is mine, something is not mine. That idea should be transcended and the devotion should be directed to God. This effort this person does all the time. Then there is this person, Vivek Tadesh Sevitvam, does not want to go partying, mixing with people, hankering after the recognition from people. That is not this person's job. Popularity, we all have that craze to become very famous, to become a celebrity, that let people know me, let my news, my picture be there everywhere, we have this tendency. So this tendency, a spiritual aspirant sees that it is detrimental to spiritual progress and therefore practices that being in a secluded place. This secluded place is very important. Secluded place should not be taken as you sit in a closed room and do not talk to anyone. But what it means is that be in the company of God. Do not seek the company of general people and do not enjoy those things like being in lot of company and then having party with them. Those ideas a spiritual aspirant has to avoid. And this is why this is told, because there is a tendency that we go to such celebrations because there will be lot of people. And then we like to socialize with them, mingle with them, talk to them. And we can see what are the topics of such talk, most worldly. Because these things come down to the that most common level, doesn't go beyond that. Because we want to include everyone in the conversation. So the easiest way that everybody can pitch in is to criticize the government. that is, it doesn't take much. So we bashing government, then bashing somebody who is not right now there. They say that, well, in a ladies club, the discussions were not very lively. All used to come and then there is not much lively discussion. So to make the discussion lively, they told everybody in every meeting, one of them should be absent. So that the meeting started becoming very lively, because everybody then started criticizing that lady. So the meetings then become lively. So this is this is to be avoided, that mixing. This person does not get into such things. Arati, Janasamsadi, there is no desire to become popular amongst people. Adhyatma Jnana Nityatvam, the goal of life is constantly remembered. That, oh, that spiritual wisdom, that is my goal. And about that, a very steady attitude is there, that always that is kept in the focus. That why am I alive? What is the purpose of life? In doing all other things, let this be a spiritual aspirant keeps this as the central point of thought. The mind is always tied to that. And think of the highest goal, the nature of reality. Keep on thinking about it. Many question that, well, the thinking about it doesn't really, it is beyond thought. Yes, it is beyond thought. Doesn't mean that you should not think about it. Think about it. Not that by thinking it will get caught in your thought, but your thinking will expand. Your thinking then will become more and more congenial to the nature of the truth. That is an important practice, thinking about the nature of the truth. And then Lord concludes this discussion, a very beautiful and practically very important discussion to actually build spiritual life, by telling that this is knowledge, and the knowledge of the knower that I was telling, knowledge of the Kshetrajna, this is that. Shankara comments there that this is knowledge because this is the means of knowledge. Being the means of knowledge, this is also called knowledge. There is no other way of specifying it. So you inculcate these virtues and you become knower of the truth. And if this is not there, ajnanam tadano tadatonyatha, Lord is very clear about it, that if you think that you have a lot of that knowledge of the divine, but you do not have these virtues in life, then it is not knowledge, it is ignorance. Very categorically this has been told, that if there is knowledge, all these great qualities will be filling your life. If they are not there, then other things really do not, well, I am a member of Vedanta Society for 40 years. Maybe that is not what is told by the Lord here as the criterion of knowledge. Oh, I am a Swami for so many years. That is again not told by Lord as the sign of knowledge. The sign of knowledge is having the life filled with these virtues. If not, then you may have many other those qualifications. And they may appear to be very spiritual. That is not at all knowledge. So ajnanam yadatonyatha, when this line I had read first, it was such a very illuminating idea I got from it. I again and again think of this line, eta jnanam iti proktam, that this is what is called as the true knowledge, and whatever is not this is ignorance. So, as Swami Vivekananda was never tired of saying that this spiritual knowledge is being and becoming. It is transformation of life. So, Lord says that this is it, that you change your life and you become that. It is a very important part. Now we will continue with this understanding to the next verses, that this is, Lord says, is beyond existence and non-existence, beyond the regular dualities of life. We shall try to discuss these in our next class. As I had told on Tuesday, that was the last class on Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna in this room. This will be the last class on Bhagavad Gita held in this room. You all know that on Sunday, day after tomorrow, and we shall be having the worship of Sri Ramakrishna. All of you are invited for that day long worship programs. And then from that day we are beginning to use this new beautiful chapel for our morning and evening meditations. Not tomorrow, tomorrow it will be still here. But from Sunday, day after tomorrow, we will have all these chapel and shrine activities in that new space. So please join and make that place holy. Today one worker was telling me, he felt very sad. It brought tears to my eyes. A very important thing. He has been coming here. He comes only on Fridays to do the cleaning for whole of the week there, so that everybody works and make the place dirty. So he comes every Friday, and last 1 year the work, more than that, the work is going on. He is coming every Friday, and he said that now it is all over. I will not get a chance to come here on Friday. He said that this is a place where I got so much of peace. And just by being here, I feel so happy. I feel so calm. All people here, you have something different in you. He was not able to specify. And he said that, I just come here, I do the cleaning, but I want to be in this place. I don't know if I will be able to come. I said, please feel free to come, keep on coming again, and just for the holy vibes that you feel, the peaceful vibes that you feel. So what makes this place, just give it a thought, what makes the place holy? It is our holy vibrations in our heart, friends. So let us look forward to that. Any questions? Yes, Shravani?
In the earlier classes and today also you say that this quality is knowledge. So basically, when you say knowledge, does it mean that by these qualities the Kshetriyajna is described? When you say knowledge,
yeah,
how the qualities are changed? Knowledge.
Yeah, it is a good question that these qualities are knowledge, because these qualities make you eligible to get this knowledge. This wisdom is synonymous with these qualities. If you have these, that then you are eligible for this knowledge, means you get it. If you are eligible for something, then you have it. Otherwise, you do not have it. So in that sense, it is knowledge. There is other thought also about it. You tell me, in what other way can it be described?
Another thought in the sense that you have been saying cultivation, acquiring,
yeah,
this thought.
Yes.
But aren't this acquiring this quality, but aren't those already existing? I mean, they are they are what is living on them.
They, oh well, they are to be cultivated, they are within us only in the seed form. That when you cultivate, what do? You do not make the seed. You have the seed. The seed is sown and then you grow from that seed.
But acquiring is not.
Then acquiring is only in that sense, in the sense of cultivation. Acquisition is, the word is used only in that sense. You know, when we describe these things, the poverty of words, poverty of language really comes to fore. That any word you use will have some difficulties in that. Because this is not really something that can be exactly described. Yes, Abhijit?
In trying to specify what is the kshetra, says everything we perceive is kshetra. All these are kshetra. And kshetrajna doesn't try to specify it. But, you know, I am the perceiver. So why is it that I don't have knowledge of the perceiver? If I know that I am the perceiver, then we have the knowledge of the perceiver. Is it because we don't have, is that we confuse between the ego, or is it that we know of ourselves but we don't know that it's the same as?
Yeah, exactly. It is a very nice question. That we know this, that I am the perceiver. What is more than to know about it? It is what is this? I know it already. I am the perceiver. But we are very confused about who this I is. What is the nature of this I? This question is very often discussed in different Vedanta texts. In fact, also the texts of other religions too, that what is the nature of this self, this perceiver? That is to be properly identified, properly understood. We mistake this perceiver self with the perceived. That confusion, like the body is perceived, but we identify body and with the perceiver. Similarly with the mind, it is perceived, but we think that it is perceiver. So, to separate that is the purpose of this chapter, to understand the perceiver distinct from the perceived and yet just immanent in all that is perceived. It is a discernment that is to be developed. All that is perceived, our Sam asked this question many times, that well, everything is self, so why call this unreal and this as real? It is unreal is only in the sense of that is changing, and that is therefore it is not the unchanging reality. It is like the screen and the movie that is seen on the screen. The screen is all that is. Every picture that you see there is screen. But the question is, do you see it as screen or not? We see it as a picture, get identified with the picture, think that the picture is real, and in fact question, is there screen at all or not? So that is why this beautiful idea of discernment, that separates these from each other. And then we can see that idea had come very strongly in the 7th and the 9th chapters. That then you will see that God pervades in all these. All these are the manifestations of self. So this is therefore the knowledge of the self. Yes, John?
Yeah, I was thinking, you said that knowledge is important, but, you know, my thinking is that you could forget, so there's going to be some kind of maintenance to keep that knowledge.
Yeah.
I remember a saying, pain cancels knowledge. And, you know, it makes you, you know, forget. But I think you went through some of the ingredients of maintenance, like you were talking about.
Yeah.
Not to strive for popularity.
What you said is correct, that you have to prevent this, forgetting this knowledge by repeating it again and again. But when this reaches culmination, then you don't need to worry about it. There is a very nice story, an incident in the life of Sri Ramakrishna. That Sri Ramakrishna's Vedanta teacher, Totapuri, he told Sri Ramakrishna that, look, one has to regularly keep up the practice of meditation, concentration. Why? He said, look at his metal, a brass water jar. And he said, if I don't clean it every day, what will happen? It will lose its luster. So, to keep the luster of one's knowledge, one should keep on cleaning it regularly every day. And then Sri Ramakrishna said, but well, if the jar is that of gold, then his teacher smiled and said, that's right, then you don't have to keep on. In fact, you should not then go on rubbing it. And that will destroy the scratch and destroy the gold. So, that is the idea, that when it is gold, it is, its luster is constant. So, when one's life gets to that stage, then that person is no more a person. There is no I. There is nobody to do spiritual practice really. That I am doing spiritual practice, that also vanishes. Then, now there is no need for a so-called reminder there.
Thanks for reminding me.
So let us conclude with the closing prayer. Gita Sugita Kartavya Anya Shastra Vichari Ya Swayam Vajna Vajya Bhagatma Vinishrita Eyam Shastram Devaki Putra Vedam Ego Devo Devaki Putra Eva Ego Mantra Tajyanani Yani Karma Vedam Tajyadeva Sajdeva Sri Vishnu.